Yeah, I'm Matt Cowell. I am not a fellow. I'm a research assistant at the Berkman Center. I worked at MIT for about 2 years helping run something called iGEM, which I'll tell you about in a second. And I'm starting a local lab. I just incorporated it yesterday, so it's getting exciting. And I'm here to tell you guys about this thing, do-it-yourself biology. And it's a talk about these sort of non-institutional researchers out there. What's going on? Is there a convergence happening? Is there more of it now than there was before? This is a picture of me drinking a shot of overproof rum and my own DNA that I extracted with the rum. It's gross, but I drank it, and it's made all with kitchen chemicals. Oh, it looks like it's clipping a little bit. But I bring it up because it's a neat little parlor trick you could do with anybody. It takes 5 minutes, and it's all stuff that you find in a kitchen. Salt, a little bit of soap, just a tiny bit of soap. Contact lens cleaner, which breaks up proteins, and concentrated alcohol. Drinking alcohol in this case, if you want to drink it. So, if you spit in a shot glass for 5 minutes, you'll get a quarter of a shot glass of your own spit, some of which contains cheek cells. You add the other ingredients, the salt or the alcohol last, and you layer the alcohol on top of the rest of the mixture. And at that interface, DNA and other cellular machinery from your cells precipitate and become visible. It looks like mucus. And in fact, with a glass rod or a toothpick, you can swizzle it around and pull it up and look at it. You can't really do anything after that.
So drink it.
But you could drink it. That's right. And I like to drink it sort of as like performance art. And I also encourage people who do this with me to drink it as well. And the reason I do that is because it causes them to confront a sort of subconscious and endemic fear of science and technology that seems to be present in our society. Because you can do this with someone, right, in their own kitchen, with their own materials, with their own spit. And as soon as you say, you just isolated DNA, they freak out. They say, oh my God, I can't drink that. It has DNA in it. It's like, okay, well, why really don't you want to drink this? Well, because it tastes like spit. Okay, that maybe is a better answer, but the thing is that it really unearths this strange fear that many people have to the unknown. And I think that that's a problem, and it's something we should do something about. And I hope that distributed amateur science, the increasing numbers of people who are not doing this professionally but for the fun of it or for other reasons, that's one way of addressing and digging up and getting rid of this sort of fear of the unknown. There's a book that I just started reading called The Nature of Technology by this guy, Professor Arthur. And I was struck reading the introduction because he sort of hits on this. He says, we're attuned in the deepest parts of our being to nature, to our original surroundings and our original condition as humankind. We have a familiarity with nature that comes from 3 million years of at-homeness with it. We trust nature. When we happen upon a technology such as stem cell regenerative therapy, we experience hope. But we also immediately ask how natural this technology is. And so we're caught between two huge and unconscious forces. Our deepest hope as humans lies in technology, but our deepest trust lies in nature. These forces are like tectonic plates grinding inexorably together. And so he goes on to say that he thinks the big deal of this century is going to be how these two things collide and how we resolve that collision. And so my small, humble, modest answer is, well, partially, we should get science out of academia and out of industry and everywhere, sort of distributed. It should be something that's celebrated and that kids do a little piece of. And that's really just domesticated, essentially. That's a term, domesticated biotechnology, that Freeman Dyson used recently in a really provoking piece in like the New York Times Book Review. I don't have time to go over it, but I like that word, domesticating biotechnology. So why do I think that we can actually do interesting amateur biology or distributed science? I think there's sort of three types of improvements that are happening that make this possible. One is lab as a service. So you don't have to pay any infrastructure costs to have a DNA synthesis or sequencing company or protein isolation company do some of the work for you. As those things increase, as the industry they're in becomes more of a commodity, or the products that they're offering become more commoditized, I think the price drops. So it opens up the door for essentially armchair science. You can't get away with just having guys on the internet do everything for you yet, at least not in a cost-effective manner, but I think that's the direction we're heading towards. Additionally, synthetic biology, sort of its mission statement is to make biology easier to engineer, and the core concept there is modularity. If you look at how other industries sort of went from science and became engineering disciplines, you can see this froth of experts form at that transition point, who then become like hobbyists and the active members of a sort of non-institutional group of people doing research with that. So I mean like electronics hackers at the turn of the century, working on radios, RC car people in the 50s and 60s, and now computer hackers from the 70s and 80s. So I think that as an area becomes more engineerable, it opens the doors for lots of reasons for individuals or small groups of people to take advantage of the modularity and the complexity hiding that those engineering principles provide. So there up there, there's a picture of a data sheet from Barry Cannon and Drew Endy, and I hope that David's going to talk about the BioBricks public agreement, so that's going to be important.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, right, and on the right side, DIY equipment and techniques, I think, are another key piece of this puzzle, because if essentially you've got this group of people working for free to figure out how to do lo-fi science or research, how to do what might cost $1,000 or $10,000 or involve toxic chemicals or exotic elements in a lab, and that's okay in a traditional lab, they're asking, how can we do this in a conventional setting with off-the-shelf stuff? And so they may not be inventing or making new scientific discoveries, but they're sort of tuning what we can do already in a way that makes it easier and faster. And so I think all three of those things combine and work together to make it overall easier for anyone, anywhere, to do biotechnology. An existence proof for my belief is in iGEM, where I think just this last year they had like 110 teams from around the world, more teams internationally than nationally, composed of undergraduate students, not graduate students, many of whom who had never done biotechnology before, they were mathematicians or engineers. They come together for like 15 weeks, 10 weeks, and they produce all sorts of amazing things, like beer that synthesizes, yeast that synthesizes resveratrol into your beer, like the wine, or bacterial-based edge detectors, this famous one, generating different odorant molecules with E. coli, like banana and wintergreen. This is interesting because it's research, but it's not necessarily research that would normally get funded. And it's all being done by these newcomers and these teams of undergraduates in a short amount of time. So I think, well, that's great. And if undergraduates can do it, why can't pretty much anyone who's sufficiently motivated? I think they can. And so I think there's actually an opportunity for amateurs.
What's the banana hack?
The banana one is making E. coli produce the smell of bananas when you flip a switch, essentially. It smells like a banana milkshake. Why is that good for science? I'm not sure, but it's a toy, and maybe it will be useful someday, or maybe not. Or maybe the perfume industry will think it's really great, want to buy it. It's just an example of a successful project that came out of iGEM that's pretty neat. So that's why I think amateur biology is or distributed science, as John Wilbanks would say it, or DIY bio, why I think that's interesting and important. I think it will help bridge the gap that our country has between professional scientists and the public understanding of science. And I think maybe, like these iGEMS teams are doing, interesting fringe discoveries or products will come out of it. So let me tell you a little about DIY bio. It's a name. It's a brand. It's not a company. It's nothing beyond a word. Do-it-yourself biology. There's about 1,000 people, maybe more, who throw the word around. Actually, a lot more. 1,000 people technically registered on the site, but the term pops up everywhere. And so it's sort of like now the system is just defining itself. No one. It's hard to kind of put a one definition on it and say this is exactly what it is. We do have one on the site, though. It basically says, we want to be an institution for those who don't have an institution, whatever that means, maybe a virtual one. On the site, there's this map, and it's a public Google map. Anyone can drop a pin on it saying, oh, I'm a DIY biologist. I'm doing stuff. And it's interesting because originally there were only 5 pins a year ago. And then in April, that's what it looked like. This is it today. And it's we've expanded up into Canada, South America, India, and Japan. I don't think I'm covering
Atlantis?
Maybe Atlantis. Oh, yeah, I think some guy's just marketing. He's just sticking this pin out there because he wants everyone to look at it. It's actually for Florida. And then an interesting thing is we don't have any kind of like social software set up on the website. It's just a blog. And so what's started happening, this is sort of an aside, but I think it's interesting. People have been using Google Map to social network. They'll drop a pin and say, hi, I'm not sure if this guy even uses his name. Hi, here's my email address. I can't believe there's no DIY bio group anywhere near St. Louis. We should change that. Just email me here. And that's what's happening on this map. It's kind of interesting. I think maybe we should be doing something more structured, but so far the map's okay. So here's some projects that have been going on in the community. The group in India runs these really cool USB webcam hacking workshops where they turn $20 webcams into microscopes. And they also wrote this neat Synthetic Biology for Artists and Designers handbook, which is just sort of like the visual style of it breaks down a lot of the barriers that I was talking about before. I'm working on making a trading card version of BioBricks that can be used as an educational kit. We'll send out 7, and you get to do a transformation and maybe express banana or red light or brown pigment. A sort of, maybe I won't just, I'll just quickly summarize these. So there's some hardware hacking, different organizations, different regions like Boston, New York City, and San Francisco are all sort of forming local cells where they become an LLC or a nonprofit. We're doing that here. And I just learned about, at the very bottom, if you look, you'll see this thing called lively.org. The picture from the left, the second from the left, is a picture of their garage. They're a startup biotech company in San Francisco, and they've actually offered that workspace out to anyone interested in swinging by and doing some biohacking in it. Even if it's a sort of like, you don't have to be, it doesn't have to be to complete your PhD thesis, it can sort of be exploratory. So I'm pretty excited to see that sort of thing, and I hope more and more biotech startups make space available like that. One of the people here in Boston put together a stack of equipment in her closet and analyzed one of her own genes because her parents were carriers for a genetic disease called hemochromatosis. She's also a carrier. She doesn't have it, according to her own analysis. It costs precisely the same amount as the actual clinical kit. One interesting thing about this is if you do it yourself, the doctor will say it doesn't matter, you have to get it done again. And I foresee a interesting friction in the future as more and more people are running off-the-shelf kits or tests on themselves and doctors saying, no, it doesn't work like that. Jason Bowe from Harvard is really interested in next-gen sequencing, and so he's got this company he's forming now called BioWeather Maps. The idea is you take swabs around the environment, you collect DNA, send it off to a company, and they tell you up to 1,000 or 2 of the microbes that were on that surface. No growing of microbes required. The idea is that it should cost $5 or $10 for a swab. So you can just, if you have any concerns, like what's on the dollar bill that you just got. In fact, he just told me that they confirmed dollar bills work, and the crosswalk push buttons don't work. So he's getting that going. Should be pretty good. Tito Jankowski out in San Francisco kind of hacked together all the best features of gel boxes, which usually cause them to cost $2,000, and he's selling his version for $200, much more affordable.
It's for electrophoresis?
Yeah, for electrophoresis. And there are interesting patent issues there because he's pretty much ignoring a bunch.
I was going to say, that's right? Interesting.
So we'll see how long that lasts. Yeah. He calls it an open source kit. I think that it's just waiting to be stressed. I think that he's got all the plans and all the cutting instructions up online. So, my ideal world, there will be lots of sets of hardware like this, just with the plans, and people will sell components of it, in so much as they can avoid.
The hardware's probably off patent anyway.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. So here's Lively. They're getting started in San Francisco. I'm starting the lab here. It's called the BOSS Lab, the Boston Open Source Science Lab. The idea is to provide a space that brings together experts like PhD students with people like me, interested amateurs, to work on things like the gel box or the trading cards. So if you're interested in that, I'll give you a tour. We just unpacked it last week, right before Thanksgiving. Also, late January or early February, we're running a mini conference called Future Lab Camp. And the idea is to bring together people who are interested in the software and hardware around biology. And asking the basic question that spawned this conference was, why is it the case that my lab instruments don't automatically dump their data into my lab notebook? Why do I see PhD students using a plate reader printing out an Excel sheet on paper of the results and then taking that and pasting it into their lab notebooks with tape? That's not very cutting edge. It's weird. So we're running this conference. Hopefully a lot of like little hardware mashups will come out of it. And that's it. That's all I've got to say.